Okay, NFL fans, it's time for NFL Pick'em.
But not like boring Pick'em like all the other sports radio shows. We see who's the best in Gwen versus Chris. NFL Pick'em Edition on 97.3 The Fan. The Fan. The Fan.
All right, our pick contest has been very contentious all season long, and I mean that contentious, not that we're not getting along,
right, in a
but
good
just
way.
The fact that it's been
it's
close.
Competitive.
Competitive indeed. I hit a big one last week, though, on the Cowboys with
first,
my upset.
First game. Pick.
Right, so that extended my lead a little bit. Right now, 83-74. So you're trailing by 9, Tony, but you've got 4 weeks left. And that is plenty of time to make up the ground. We do a three-point game, a two-point game, and a one-point game. And then the biggie is the upset pick of the week. And if you can hit that, you can score that many points, whatever that team is underdog by. So Tony will be looking to capitalize on that this week. But he has to sit by because it's my week to go first.
I got my upset pick if you don't pick it.
I know you do. And I'm not going to pick it either. So here we go. First up, look, I got to go Chargers. I mean, over Cincinnati. 14-point favorites. We don't have to beat the spread in our 3-2-1 pick. So, yeah, Chargers is the number one play on the board this week. Got to take what's there.
I'm going to take Pittsburgh.
Pittsburgh over Oakland. Steelers have lost two in a row. I'm not trying to dissuade you, but I'm just – and they are traveling cross-country, but they're also – when
playing
they
open.
Arrive cross-country, they'll see the Raiders.
Right.
So that certainly helps them. All right, my second pick for 2 points is – there's no way the Saints are going to lose twice to Tampa Bay in one season. Can you imagine?
Nope.
Right? The
nope.
Saints being – what are they, 10-2? They could be 10-3 with two losses to Fitzpatrick and Winston.
And
I don't think
and
so.
And one to Dallas.
Right. They lost. That's right. They're coming off a loss, too. So bad timing for Tampa Bay. It'll probably be another high-scoring game, but I got to go Saints. I can't see them losing again to Tampa Bay. Your pick for 2 points is?
Yeah, I hate picking this team, but I'm going to pick them anyway. I'm going to take New England.
All right. You know why you're doing that? Because I talked you into it. There was a time when you were thinking about Miami for your upset pick.
You did talk me out of it.
But I talked you out of it yesterday because Xavien Howard, Miami's excellent cornerback, will be out of that game. And he picked Brady, I think, twice last year when they upset them.
Yeah.
Guess who Brady is going to pick on Sunday? Who's ever replacing this guy?
Right.
That's what Brady does, and the Patriots do better than anybody
Belichick
else.
Belichick does it for sure.
And it's not illegal.
Yeah.
You know, I don't understand why more teams don't do that. Look out on the field, see who the new guy is, and pick on him endlessly.
Who's the guy replacing the starter?
That's right.
That guy. Let's go after him.
That's
all day.
What the Patriots do. They do it better than any team, and I don't understand why other teams don't do it. All right, so you go Patriots. Okay, my one-point pick. I'm doing this on a lark, or on a wing and a prayer, because I picked them to go to the Super Bowl, and I keep saying that. They got to keep winning. So they're home tonight, Tennessee. They've looked so ugly week after week after week. But Jacksonville, not doing too well. I'll take Tennessee for the one-pointer. It's a tough week for the one-point game, I think. I don't know what you see out there remaining, but it's your turn for a one-point pick. Who do you like?
Oof.
Yeah,
man,
there's not a lot.
There's not a lot of good ones on here.
This one point
give me Houston again.
Oh yeah, good thinking. Houston over Indianapolis. Houston's won what, 9 in a row?
9 in a row.
Unreal. Okay, so there's our 3-point pick, 2-point pick, 1-point pick. We usually do pretty good on those, but the key is the upset pick. This is where you can score some points. And now every game is back on the board, and I get to choose first. And trying to pick a team that's going to win the game straight up, but they're underdog heading into the game. And I'm not even going to try to, like, see, God, Green Bay is giving 5 points to Atlanta, and Green Bay is a disaster right now. Joe Philbin? I mean, I could
Your
take
guy.
No, he's not my guy.
Former Miami guy.
Can't stand him. But Atlanta's been 5 points would be on the line there, and I think that might be a game you're looking at. I think Philadelphia is a possibility at Dallas. They have to win that game to keep any chances of returning to the playoffs alive. But Dallas is really playing much better.
They are.
Boy, it's tough. Those are the two that I'm really looking at. Give me whichever one I pick, the other one's going to win. I'll take the Falcons, 5 points against Green Bay. Just assume Green Bay is a complete, total, utter mess, disaster.
That's a good pick.
So I'll take Atlanta for 5 points if they win.
I'm going to take Baltimore.
You are, huh?
Yes.
I saw that game and I saw it and I said, well, he didn't pick Kansas City, so he's probably going to take Baltimore to upset Kansas
Here's
City.
Here's my thinking, right? We talked it up last week after the Chargers beat Pittsburgh that they're in this race.
They sure are.
And I think this is a trap game for Kansas City, especially after all the things they've dealt with in the past 2 weeks.
They didn't look very good last week.
They didn't look good last week.
They've got the Chargers next Thursday.
They got to be looking at that game
already.
They're
looking ahead.
And Baltimore's defense is not something that you can just push over. And I think the fact that they have to prepare for Lamar Jackson, as much as he runs this football, I think the Baltimore is going to try to control this clock. And I think they got a chance to pull off the upset.
How many points is Baltimore going to score? Let's be honest. Oakland put 33 up on Kansas City last week, and that's Oakland.
Right.
So that's
right.
A nice pick. All right. So you could get 6 points if Baltimore wins that game.
You get five, right?
I get five if Atlanta wins theirs. But if I'm wrong and you're right on the underdog, all of a sudden this is close
tight
again. All right. There's our NFL Pick'em segment. We'll let you know how it turns out on Monday.
An hour away. That game will be on our station, 97.3 The Fan.
Absolutely. You can go down and enjoy the Thursday night party, and then if you need to get out of there, you listen to the second half right here on the radio.
Yeah, you can get some good food. Bubs is the wings are legit, so treat yourself. We are lucky to be joined by we got a little bit of a San Diego connection here. Doug Gottlieb called the game, the USD San Diego State game last night, and unfortunately our Aztecs lost, but Doug, how you doing today?
Great, man. There's no losers when San Diego beats San Diego State. I mean, I guess there were losers.
Yeah,
good point. I guess San Diego State losing at home for the first time since 2000.
Yeah,
you know, hadn't lost the Toronto's indoors since 2000. So
yeah, unfortunately, Doug, I was there for that game, and it wasn't a pretty game in 2000.
The 2000 game.
Yeah.
Hey, Doug, you were there for that game. I'm sorry. What was the atmosphere like last night? I mean, was it a little dead? Were the Aztecs a little dead? I mean, take us courtside and give us a little feel for how you thought the Aztecs came out.
The atmosphere wasn't typical for, you know, for Viejas. It wasn't great. A little disappointing considering it is San Diego, and San Diego's pretty good this year. Man, an amazing rainbow on the 405. Holy cow. Hold on. Sorry, it's been pouring. I don't know, is it still raining down there?
Yep, it's still raining.
Oh, man, you're more than welcome to point that out. Love that stuff.
Dude, well, no, I mean, we've had, like, flood warnings, and my kids' school, some of the schools around here were, like, closed because of, you know, no one planned for this much rain at Orange County Public Schools. Anyway, where was I last night? Yeah, it was kind of dead. I mean, bunch of rain, you know, midweek game. San Diego hadn't beaten them in forever. So, yeah, it was kind of dead, but that's not why they lost. I mean, they had a 7-point lead at the half, and I thought San Diego State didn't take advantage of San Diego really struggling offensively in the first half. That 7-point lead probably should have been 15. Mm. And then, you know, Jalen McDaniels had a flagrant one in the first half, a technical in the second half. And eventually he fouled out. That kind of threw him off his game. And then I thought just San Diego just outplayed him. You know, they had their own foul trouble. Kid Isaiah Pinheiro, the fifth-year senior, he played really well. But then he got foul trouble, and he had four, you know, with like, I don't know what it was, nine to go, and the game was tied, and they want to run without him. So I thought San Diego just did a better job of executing their offense, really shrinking the court defensively, making San Diego State's non-shooters make shots. And You know, San Diego State got a little selfish, looked a little immature offensively, and then got beat up a little bit in the offensive boards defensively, and you end up getting beat by, I think, a good San Diego team.
Yeah, those that team led by only three seniors seemed like they played a young version of basketball last night. Tell us a little bit about this USD team. We know a little bit about it. Obviously, this team is much improved over the years past. What did you see from them last night that might have been impressive?
Well, I mean, first, you know, I think Sam Scholes, of course, got the job. And you hire from within. You end up keeping everybody. But there's always going to be questions about whether or not, you know, he can actually do the job. I thought he did a great job with the kids. He really is the staff coach. If you guys haven't seen Isaiah Pinheiro play, Puerto Rican kid who went to junior college for a year, gray-shirted, then went to Portland State, transferred from Portland State. He's just gotten better every year. He's built like a brick, you know, what house. Kind of a face-up four-man in college basketball. And I thought he did a good job. Probably key to their game was Isaiah Wright took over a little bit late. You know, another senior, he's a transfer from Utah. So, you know, he got a couple transfers, older kids. And then that is freshman, kid from Torrey Pines, Finn Sullivan. He was great, you know. Hit his first three of his college career, made a couple free throws, got a couple offensive rebounds, a couple assists. I thought he really, really helped. You know, played for Coach Olive over at Torrey Pines. So, Sam's doing a good job. They're a good team. And for San Diego State, you know, their issue is they got three guys that can score, McDaniels, Mitchell, and, you know, you got a point guard who, in Devin Watson, who's a fifth-year senior, and he shot the ball well, but to hold the ball that much, to handle the ball that much, only have three assists, you know, playing 40 minutes, he never came out of the court. He's got to move the ball more, or you got to move him off the basketball. So I don't think they have enough shot creators, and they have like three shot makers. So it's still a work in progress, but I do think San Diego State has a chance to really improve in Mountain West play.
They did it last year, and that's certainly going to be the hope this year. Doug Gottlieb is with us afternoons here on 97.3 The Fan, called the Aztecs-Torero game last night. I want to stick with the Toreros also because Gonzaga's in their conference, and obviously we saw what Gonzaga did. They beat Duke, so, I mean, that gives them all the cachet in the world. How real of a number one team in the nation, though, do you really think Gonzaga is? And staying on the West Coast, it surprises me to see Nevada so high in the rankings. Not that they're not good, but usually the East Coast and the rest of the writers and people don't recognize teams from the West Coast this early in the season. So you got two teams really top five, Gonzaga and Nevada. Tell me a little bit about those two and what you think they can do.
Well, let's start with Gonzaga. I mean, yeah, they're number one team. They're legit. I mean, I think they broke through to legitimacy a couple years ago when they played for a national championship game and lost by a bucket.
Yeah.
And then, you know, they beat Washington last night, winning out in Maui. You know, it wasn't just Duke that they beat. I mean, you had to beat three good teams in order to beat Duke. So, you know, they're deep. They're experienced. They've been playing without Killian Tilly, one of their best, you know, face-up four or five men. Like, they're actually going to get better and more talented. And so, then you look at Nevada, and they have the Martin twins back. They're 23 years old. They have Jordan Caroline, that's Simeon Rice's son, kid who's going to turn 23 here this month. And, they, you know, they have all, their starting lineup is all 22 and older. And then you bring Jazz Johnson, a shooter off the bench, who's also 22, 23 years old. They're just a group of young, they're men. You know, and in college basketball these days, the old adage is get old, stay old.
Yeah.
And Nevada is fortunate to have guys that are good enough to be borderline pros, but not good enough to be legitimate first-round draft picks. And so, you know, you end up getting them to hang around for another year. And I think they're a very, very good team. I think they're balanced. I think they have, you know, better interior play this year than they had last year. I think they got better shooting off the bench than they had last year. And, you know, I also don't think they have any agendas. You know, they don't have any guys playing for anything. With the exception maybe of Caleb Martin, he gets a little selfish sometimes. But so Gonzaga and Nevada are legit. And remember, you can't compare them to like San Diego State when they went to the Sweet 16 or, you know, Arizona a couple years ago. They don't have to beat those teams. They only have to beat the teams this year. And college basketball saw you know, a tremendous exodus to the NBA last year. And so, you know, you have teams like Kentucky that are almost starting all over.
Yeah.
So young teams going against teams of 22, 23-year-old kids. The older team is almost always going to win, especially early in the season. But, you know, Gonzaga is legit, and I think they'll be good the entire season.
Doug, before we let you get out of here, I got to hear your take on KD's comments about LeBron, because one, I respect your basketball mind so much, but I want to hear what you think about it.
I don't think he's wrong. I think it's hard to play with LeBron. You know,
there's some truth to it then.
Oh yeah. I mean, there's, look, man, end of the game, he's going to have the ball. Now, you may get to shoot it, but you're going to get it when he decides to give it to you.
Right.
And that's, like, that's just kind of the way it goes. And if you don't win, it's going to be on you, not on him. Like, and you don't believe me, go back and look at all the times he didn't win. Nobody, very few people were ever like, hey, you know, LeBron could have been better here, could have been better there.
Yeah, it's usually, like, blamed on Kevin Love or Chris Bosh.
Correct. And that's what happened, especially the third guy. Second guy, not necessarily my third guy. But I think LeBron, he may brush it off as like, oh, it's taken out of context or whatever. I honestly think he hears it, he knows it, and he's trying to be a better teammate. If you watch him,
he is.
First three quarters of last night, he's trying to move the ball. He's trying to play within an offense. He doesn't guard like he used to. He doesn't move like he used to, but he's become an unbelievable shot maker, which he wasn't always. Like, he's always been just a bigger, stronger athlete, skilled with the ball, you know, playing what's called downhill, going towards the basket. Now he's become a lot more skilled, making fadeaways, making step-back threes. You know, his skill has really increased as his athleticism has decreased some. But if you watch, you know, last night, he was moving the ball. He was letting those young guys, go ahead, fellas, show me what you got. And then, you know, they're down, what was it, I don't know, 8 late. And then he comes in, he's like, all right, you know, hop on my back, let's go win a game. And he has 19 in the last 10 and a half minutes in the fourth quarter. But I don't think KD, you know, look, KD's not wrong either with fanboys in the media. There's some guys that no matter how. But you watch the other way, too. There's some haters in the media that,
yeah,
you know, Skip Bayless, if you play, well, you play well, he doesn't give you respect. If you play poorly, guys don't crush him. It's a weird, we're in this weird, because there's so many debate shows, nobody's willing to go like, hey, you know, the truth is somewhere in the middle.
Right.
Right?
It's got to be,
like,
one or the other.
Like, he's not the closer that Michael Jordan, he hasn't shown the ability to be the closer that Michael Jordan was. You know, he just hasn't. On the other hand, the things that he does that Mike didn't do or couldn't do. And, oh, yeah, by the way, he's actually getting better as a closer, as a shooter, as his career goes on. Like, no player stays the same. And but we've gotten to this point where I think maybe KD didn't articulate it well enough, which is, like, there are guys that, because of the things that he's done off the court, he's earned so much equity. And because of some of the things he's done on the court, he's earned so much equity, they'll never criticize him. And I think that's where KD has this, he wants so badly to be liked, and yet he wants to be real at the same time. And those two things don't often coincide.
No, I think we saw that with Kobe Bryant. I think he got to a point where he just didn't care what anybody thought, and whether they liked it or not, he was going to be who he is. I don't know if KD has quite turned that corner. It seems like he's trying, though. You're right, Doug.
Yeah, and the weird thing about Kobe is now, post-career, I do think Kobe wants to be liked and enamored, and he wants to be revered for, you know, I really believe that.
Yeah.
And,
I think we lost Doug.
Well, he's driving, like, it sounds like in a
rainstorm. Right. So
I'm glad he's, I'd almost rather him be off the phone and safe.
So he can concentrate.
Right?
Oh, there he is. You're all right.
Sorry.
You're back. No worries. Right. Hey, no, understood.
Like, we got into this place to where it's raining again, by the way, in Orange County.
Yes, I can hear it.
We have, like, we do get to this place post-career where we forget about all that stuff, right?
Yeah, we do.
Like, Kobe, A-Rod, Shaq, you name it. Like, nobody, once you're done playing, like, we don't care. You're like, oh, yeah, you were great. You're in the great former athlete club, and we'll let you pretend like the bad times didn't exist. But I do think that in the moment, KD's struggling with, you know, wanting to be real and wanting to be liked, and those two things don't always coexist.
Awesome take.
They don't. Last thing, Doug, thank you so much for sending a very kind note to our boss, Adam Klug, after Georgia lost, because he was down and out, and I think the note you sent really picked him up and kind of helped.
He tried to play it off like he was just checking on me. No, he was talking some noise to you there, Adam. You just didn't respond.
No. Listen, I was legit checking on him.
Oh, like, you were? Okay.
If you never, yes. Like, I don't think there isn't anything outside of my family on earth I love like Adam Klug loves his dog. we make people make fun of like the whole SEC, it just means more thing, but it does just mean more.
Yeah.
Like, that is
true
and
story.
The fact that they can't beat Alabama, I don't know if you guys listen to my show coming in, but what's his name? I had linebacker from the New York Giants on earlier today. He used to be he was a Ram previously, and he's a Alec Oglesby. We had Alec Oglesby on. Like, I mentioned the Georgia game, and like all of a sudden you can hear his voice completely change. Huh. Like, look, here's a dude who's an All Pro in the National Football League. You know, he plays for the Giants. He played last year for the Rams. Like, he was a superstar at Georgia. They lost in the SEC championship game. And you could just hear him say, like, dude, we just can't beat those guys. And anybody who's ever had a nemesis in life understands that. Like, whether it's your high school, whether you're a little kid, you know, on your block, or in your professional life, you know, there's a rival and then there's a nemesis. For Georgia, their rival is Auburn. Their nemesis is Alabama. They just can't get over Alabama. And so, honestly, I just want to make sure he was alive, that he was okay, because between 2012 and then the Super Bowl with the Falcons, 28-3 choke job, and then this deal, up two touchdowns, taking a chip shot to go up 17, three scores, good night, drive home safely, and they miss the kicker with the goggles misses the kick. I mean, I think, you know, Jalen Hurts comes in, rides in on a white horse, and wins. I felt bad for him.
Well, we haven't we have steered clear of him pretty much all week.
We've left him
alone. Hey, Doug, thanks for the time. Thanks for the great job you do in the afternoons. Love listening to you, and it's great being a part of the same station you're on. Thanks for joining us this afternoon, and drive safe.
No problem, fellas. See you.
Thanks, Doug.
All right, Doug.
It's now time for the most electrifying segment in sports radio. Gwen and Chris go through the best of the rest in the Big Five.
It's a special day in the Big Five. Let me introduce the new host. And if he does a good job, he could be the permanent host of the Big Five. Mr. Thomas Andrews.
Thank you, guys. Thank you. I'm got big shoes to fill today.
Not really. Not really.
All right, Will.
That was an accidental lob right there. No.
Yeah.
All right, Will. Hit us with that.
Here we go.
Number five.
All right, Patrick.
Off to a good start.
Smooth.
Patrick Mahomes, Drew Brees, and Todd Gurley are the front runners for this year's NFL MVP. And there's only been three non-offensive players to win the MVP before: Alan Page, defensive tackle for the Vikings in 1971; Mark Mosley, who was a place kicker with the Redskins in 1982; and of course, Lawrence Taylor of the New York Giants to win it in 1986. This season, Aaron Donald's got 16.5 sacks, 4 forced fumbles, 30 solo tackles, and if he breaks Michael Strahan's sack record of 22.5, does Aaron Donald have a chance to win the MVP? Tony?
That's a tough one, because this year in particular, you got some of the most prolific passers we've ever seen. But I read those numbers to you guys earlier this season with Darnold seeing like almost 70% double teams, and you mentioned the 16.5 sacks. He's closing in on Michael Strahan's record of, what was it, 22? 22.5 sacks. I would say if he gets to that record and breaks it, he's got a legitimate chance to win the MVP.
I will say, first of all, Aaron Donald gets even more points on my scale because he has to line up again next to one of the worst players in the entire NFL every Sunday, Ndamukong Suh. What a waste. I think in most seasons Aaron Donald would have a legitimate shot, but I disagree with you, Tony. I don't think he has a legitimate shot just because this is a, what do you, I mean, it's just a, it's like a...
An anomaly?
No, not necessarily that, but this is it's a blown up version of the NFL. I mean, the number 41 TDs, 10 picks, Patrick Mahomes, Goff 27-7. The numbers Gurley's put up. Luck's got 32 touchdowns. Everybody is going bananas this year. It's all about offense. And I think in a year like this, it's going to be hard to choose a defensive player.
Mahomes is closing in on. Is he close to that record? The touchdown
54,
record?
54, I think,
55.
Is the record. 55.
We're in 13. He needs
14 in four games. That's not impossible for him to do.
No, not in this NFL.
Not but the way he goes.
He doesn't have an easy stretch down the road with the Chargers and Ravens.
Well, we'll see. I think Philip Rivers is another candidate for MVP too. I just think it's the wrong year for a defensive player to win as good as Donald has been. But we'll see.
All right, Will.
It's a good question.
Number four.
All right, professional football is returning to San Diego with the AAF, and our team, the Fleet, made an announcement a couple days ago on Twitter by one of the coaches, Dave Bullard, that local legend and friend of the show, Eric Allen, has been hired to be the new defensive backs coach.
All right.
So, is this a stretch by the Fleet to bring in a local guy, to coach the team to help sell tickets? Chris?
No. I love Eric Allen, and he is a terrific guy. I don't know that anyone would buy tickets to see him coach. Yeah, I mean, with all due respect to Eric Allen.
That's a good point.
I think it's just a good hire because Eric Allen was one whale of a great defensive back, and I think he's going to teach these kids how to play the position pretty well. So I think it's a solid move all the way around by the Fleet. Just get Eric Allen because he's going to be good at it.
Tony?
I agree with Chris on this one. We had, as you said, Eric Allen's a friend of the show. We had him on once, and you can hear the passion about football when he was speaking. So I would imagine, based on what he was telling us, how he, you know, was able to help teach his son, I would assume he's going to be a very good cornerback coach, and will help that team get better.
Can I just say something? I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
Drew Brees is also in the MVP running. I mean, we can't talk about that subject without me mentioning
I think you're
that.
Right. I think ultimately going back to that, you're right. It's just probably the wrong year for Aaron Donald. It's still going to go down as one of the best defensive years ever, though.
Yes. All right. Sorry to interrupt.
No worries. But do you think it might help at all, or do you think it's just good
for
the team? Not sell tickets, but maybe bring a little more of the fan base locally in?
I don't think that's going to bring them in. I think, you know, more importantly, it's going to help that team get better, but I don't see it having any effect on people showing up, though.
All right. Will?
Number three.
Lamar Jackson has gone 3-0 in his first three starts, rushed 82 times for 404 yards and three touchdowns, and has passed for 540 yards with two touchdowns but three interceptions. But he's helped the Ravens move into playoff contention. If the Ravens make the playoffs, do you ride the hot hand of Lamar Jackson or the seasoned veteran of Joe Flacco? Tony?
Oh, wow. If you're John Harbaugh, you're trying to keep your job. So I'm going to say you ride the hot hand. And it certainly is okay right now for Lamar Jackson to run the football as much as he has. They've had success. I think eventually he's going to have to learn how to play out of the pocket a lot more. But for the time being, teams are going to have to keep preparing for this guy. And I don't know that you can prepare for him. I mean, he's just that elite of an athlete. He's going to continue to cause problems. If I'm John Harbaugh, I'm staying with Lamar Jackson the rest of the year.
Chris?
Well, if I'm John Harbaugh, I would really be tempted to bring Flacco back in for this reason. And that is that rookie quarterbacks hardly ever play well in the playoffs. And that includes almost all rookie quarterbacks throughout time. But having said that, there is no way he can bring Joe Flacco back in right now. He would lose the team. He would lose everything. You know what I mean? Everybody would think he's lost his mind. So I think if you're John Harbaugh, you have to secretly hope that he has a bad game against the Chiefs, stumbles a little bit against the Buccaneers, and then by the time the Chargers come to town in a few weeks, you get Flacco back in. I think that gives the Ravens the best chance to win in the postseason. I really do.
I agree.
It kind of just seems like the defense of the Ravens has been rejuvenized with the Lamar Jackson
players. It has, because they're not on the field as much as they were. Lamar Jackson is actually having long drives. And listen, because he doesn't throw the ball down the field,
those are
methodical drives. They're eating up a lot of clock. That defense doesn't have to be on the field as much, and I think that's why you've seen them almost rejuvenated since he's been in.
These are good questions, by the way. Nice job.
Uh-oh.
Really liking the questions today.
Somebody might get Wally pipped.
All right, Will.
Number two.
All right, earlier this week, the Green Bay Packers made a coaching change by firing Mike McCarthy and promoted Joe Philbin to head coach. And then days later after, longtime assistant coach Winston Moss was vocal on Twitter about the coaching change and was fired shortly after. Today, Joe Philbin talked about the firing.
Never about one thing. Again, I think it's important, as I said to the team, that we've got to be professional, accountable, respectful, and punctual. Those are the four things we've got to do these next 4 weeks. And if we do all those things, we'll be in good shape. So it wasn't about, again, you're talking to a guy who's never tweeted in his life, doesn't even know what Twitter is. So, you know, again, it's not about a tweet or anything like that. I just think the fit right now isn't what it needs to be.
So, Tony, or Chris, Tony, do you believe Joe Philbin is, do you believe Joe Philbin that it wasn't about a tweet, Chris?
Yes, I believe it wasn't about a tweet. I just think it was about Joe Philbin being a wuss and being scared that this guy actually wrote something that a lot of people saw and agreed with and believed in. Joe Philbin is just too scared to death to try and be a head coach. If anybody at all is out there getting any other attention. Plus, that clip brought me back to the worst episode of Hard Knocks ever, which was listening to that guy talk for a month and a half on Hard Knocks.
Picking your gum up and throwing it in the trash can?
Terrible.
Oh, my gosh. No, I don't believe him at all. I think it had a lot to do with the tweet. I think it's all connected to Aaron Rodgers, right? And that's what the tweet was basically pointing light to, right? If Joe Philbin is an Aaron Rodgers guy, he's going to do the things that please Aaron Rodgers. And I don't believe it for 1 second. It's not by coincidence that the tweet comes out. He's fired within hours of that. It's no coincidence. So I don't believe Joe at all.
All right. Will?
It's the thing you like in a coach, too, is just full transparency.
Right. I love how he dropped in punctuality at the end of that.
All right, 2 weeks ago, Redskins quarterback Alex Smith suffered a gruesome broken leg, and his life isn't getting any easier as his leg injury has got infected, and he's undergoing many more procedures and speculations he may not be able to walk or play again.
While there is concern that this is career-ending, there is actual concern for the health of his leg, doing his basic everyday things like walking. So while I know it's our job to focus on his football career, this could be an uphill battle for the full recovery of Alex Smith's leg. There is serious, serious concern that this infection could be so difficult to recover from that it could be career-ending for Alex.
Sorry, I had to speed it up for time-wise. But
is that why she sounded like that?
Yeah.
I was man, she is in a rush.
She's quick.
After 13 seasons with many ups and downs, do you think this is the last of Alex Smith in the NFL? Tony?
I certainly hope not, man. I'm praying for Alex Smith. I hope he can recover. Forget the football part. I just hope, based on what we heard right there, I hope he's able to walk again. But I'm pulling for him. Alex Smith turned himself into a good quarterback in the NFL. He wasn't a superstar quarterback, but if you needed a quarterback that wasn't going to make very many mistakes and he can lead your team, Alex Smith was your guy for that. So I'm rooting for him to come back. I think he will come back ultimately.
Chris?
I'm very close to being 100% on board with everything Tony said, except for the fact that I guess I am about 100 because I don't care if he ever plays football again either. I just, can this guy get healthy enough to live the rest of his life?
Right.
He's 34 years old. I mean, I don't want the news that I may not have any use of my leg coming up. So that's scary. That beats football by a mile. As far as Alex Smith, the football player, is concerned, again, I agree with you, Tony. If you bring his name up to me in the future, the Helix High kid gets a thumbs up from me.
No doubt.
I think he's had a very good career, and it is possible to have a good career without getting to a Super Bowl. Ask a whole bunch of guys. So, prayers for Alex Smith that he's going to be okay. Worry about football down the road. He's our guy, man. So he looks like
watch him and Reggie Bush at Helix.
Absolutely. High.
That's all for the Big Five from Gwynn and Chris on 97.3 The Fan.
I called his one of his championship games against Oceanside High on television one night with the coach John Cantara. They had Alex Smith and Reggie Bush in the backfield, and they barely won the game. That's how good Oceanside was.
They didn't barely get there because they played Poway to get there, and they ran them off the field.
I'm just saying the championship was a pretty good game, but Alex Smith's a good guy and a good quarterback, and man, this is very scary news.
Yeah.
Very scary news. I mean, 34 years old.
Gwynn and Chris on The Fan.
Start or sit? Add or drop?
So this is football. I like it.
Don't sleep on these sleepers.
Football rules!
Because right now, lead fantasy analyst for Bleacher Report, Matt Kemp, gives you the latest on fantasy football heading into the weekend.
Are you ready for some football?
On 97.3 The Fan.
That's right. It's that time of the week. Bleacher Report's Matt Kemp joins us. Week 14 in the NFL, which means the playoff begins in the fantasy world. Matt Kemp joins us. How you doing, Matt?
Good to talk to you guys once again. Ready for the fantasy playoffs. And believe it or not, if you hit the waiver wire this week, you're putting guys that you picked up a few days ago right into your lineup because, unfortunately, as we saw last week, more injuries hitting the running back position.
Yeah, not only last week, but up into this week, Emmanuel Sanders goes down with a torn Achilles. So, you know, obviously Cortland Sutton is a popular pick. Is Demaryius in Houston also a possible pick up here?
Well, Kiki Kuti, I guess, you know, is still kind of banged up there. The problem with Demaryius Thomas and really anybody outside of Lamar Miller or DeAndre Hopkins is they don't throw the ball that much. They're about an even split in passing and throwing, which in 2018 means you're a run-heavy team. And it's obviously worked out quite well for the Houston Texans. So I don't rank Demaryius Thomas too high, obviously keeping an eye on the injury to Kiki Kuti. But, you know, he's a wide receiver three. The Denver conversation, I think Cortland Sutton gets obviously a bump there. You know, a wide receiver three with wide receiver two upside against San Francisco this week. And then don't forget that they have had around the last month and a half Demaryius Thomas shipped to Houston, Emmanuel Sanders done for the season, Jeff Hyerman, the tight end, downed as well. I mean, that's three, still as we stand right now heading into Week 14, three of the top four players in terms of targets on the Denver Broncos aren't available anymore for the rest of the season, whether they were shipped away or injured. You're talking about 53% of the target share that is just gone. So Cortland Sutton gets that, and then if you're reaching real deep at the tight end position, Dan Lacoste has a chance as well. But the bottom line is for this team, this is all about Phillip Lindsay, who, if we didn't have Saquon Barkley, Phillip Lindsay might be the rookie of the year right now. He's playing great football, and unlike what we saw at the beginning of the year where it was him and Royce Freeman, since Freeman has been back, they have continued to stick with Phillip Lindsay in a big way, and that has paid off for the Denver Broncos, and it's paid off if you have Phillip Lindsay because he looks like an RB1. He looks like a guy that should take you to the fantasy championship.
Matt, I got to be honest with you. I just feel dumb this year. So it's just one of those seasons, and that's okay because there'll be another year, and that's all right. But here's where I think a lot of people feel like they don't know what's going on. And what I mean by that is, let's say your three running backs were Kareem Hunt, Melvin Gordon, and James Conner. Bet you had a pretty good season. However, going into the playoffs, that's 0-0-0. So what do you do in that kind of a situation? I mean, you've got guys that got you to the playoffs that can't play now.
Yeah, look, you had to be, and unfortunately, obviously, the Hunt situation is far worse than any kind of injury or anything like that. It's terrible, but you have to be protecting your assets, and that would have been done weeks ago, whether it be with Spencer Ware with Kansas City or Austin Eckler with the Chargers. Obviously, James Conner looked like the protection for Bell, and then that never happened. It was all James Conner, and now, you know, Jalen Samuels in there as well. So I think you just take a look here and say, okay, I don't have these RB1s anymore. And the further I move down the depth chart, the tougher it is to replace these guys. And we saw that last week. Spencer Ware had the touchdown, wasn't great in a good matchup against the Raiders. Austin Eckler doesn't come through for the Chargers in a very big way, but Justin Jackson does. And he looked a lot more interesting this week against the Bengals. You know, we talked about Jalen Samuels, who, by the way, if you play in Yahoo leagues, actually has tight end eligibility. So you can get a little extra flexibility in your roster if you need it, in your lineup this week if you need it. And then you might be reaching down a little bit further. Maybe you're taking care of yourself. You know, if you have Todd Gurley, Malcolm Brown looked like the handcuff there. He's done for the season. Now you're going to pick up John Kelly. Not only for injury insurance, but we could get to Week 16, and the Rams may not have anything to play for. And then some of these other teams that are, you know, maybe only going to be a 3 or 4 seed, they don't have anything to play for. The Chiefs may not have anything to play for as we move to Week 16. So you got to protect yourself here. I like Jalen Samuels in Pittsburgh taking on the Raiders this week with James Conner down. I still think Stephen Ridley will get about 8 to 10 carries, so he's more of a flex. I think Samuels is an RB2. I don't love Spencer Ware this week. I know The Chiefs have had one of the best offenses in football all season long, but the matchup against Baltimore is one of the toughest ones you could have. So he's more on the lower end of the RB2 conversation for this week. I think Austin Eckler will bounce back. A pretty solid RB2 in PPR against the Bengals, one of the worst defenses, whether it's against the pass or the run, in all of football, and I think the Chargers will absolutely control that game. So expect a lot of Eckler, and I do like Justin Jackson, the rookie running back, who hasn't played a whole heck of a lot in the last 2 weeks, only 22% of the snaps last week, but he outplayed Austin Eckler from a fantasy standpoint. And if anything, I expect to see a lot of Jackson when the Chargers have this game well in hand in the second half. So from a volume standpoint, he should get a bump up as well.
Okay, you mentioned the two backups to Melvin Gordon in San Diego. If you have to pick between those two, Eckler, Jackson, which one are you taking?
I'm still going to take Eckler because okay. I still think there's a trust factor there. And like I said, you look at the snap count, it wasn't even close. 77% for Eckler, 22% for Jackson. And I think Jackson's number should go up. And I think part of that, like I said, will be because of the game flow, the game script, the scoreboard. I think we all expect, as we should, the Chargers to easily handle that game. They're a Super Bowl contender. Bengals going in the wrong direction. Now A.J. Green out for the season. An awful defense. So I think Jackson's numbers will go up. I think Jackson is a great flex option with RB2 upside. But I still trust, and I think the Chargers also trust Eckler more, and he could always get it done in the passing game as well. So really, when you look at all these spots out here with Pittsburgh and Kansas City, I think the Chargers actually have a pair of legit starting options in their backfield.
It is so tough right now. Fantasy football has been a crazy season with all of the injuries, all of the changes. Matt Camp sorts it out for us each week from Bleacher Report. You can reach him at Twitter, at TheMattCamp. Matt, so who's left heading into the playoff this week that, like you would say, is a for sure number one running back? And who's left like number one wide receivers even? Because some of those have even changed over the last few weeks.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Michael Thomas missed practice yesterday. He's back out there, so you're liking him against Tampa Bay, of course. Then you got guys like Brown and Hopkins and Devontae Adams, who is surviving the mess in Green Bay. Julio Jones is kind of in maintenance time right now. He didn't practice again today. He'll be out there. The amount of people, and I say this all the time, tough matchups go both ways. The amount of people that asked me about sitting Odell Beckham Jr. last week was astounding to me, and I'm not sitting him down, just like I'm not sitting down my Chiefs this week in the passing game against the Baltimore Ravens. People actually asked me about sitting down Patrick Mahomes this week, which I was just, my mind was blown. I said, where are you going if you're not playing maybe the MVP candidate? I get it. The Ravens are a good defense. But they're not the 2000 Ravens. They are not the 85 Bears. This is a defense that is very good, but far from great, and they're going to have their hands full. So I think when we get to this point in the season, just the general piece of advice would be don't overthink these things. If somebody got you there and they've been doing it all year long, you're going to stick with those guys. Sure, you know, you're going to have to go get your handcuffs. You're going to go have to fill in injuries, whether it be Emmanuel Sanders or A.J. Green. I understand that. You're replacing Kerryon Johnson. The running backs, obviously, that are now unavailable. I totally understand that, the last couple of spots in your lineup. But for the most part, you're going to stick with your guys. You're going to stick with Robert Woods this week. You're going to stick with Brandon Cooks this week against the Chicago Bears. I'm not overthinking these decisions too much. You know, DJ Moore in Carolina has been the best receiver there. Now, Cam Newton's a little bit banged up. I think quarterback has some people worried this week. Newton's got the shoulder injury. Rodgers hasn't been great. Tom Brady's not been great. I understand that. Carson Wentz has been shaky. He's got Dallas this week. That's a matchup you have to respect. But then again, you got Mitch Trubisky coming back this week, and I think he could be a top-10 quarterback. You're going to play Andrew Luck even against Houston. There's still confidence there. There's still confidence in the Deshaun Watson. There's still confidence in Jameis Winston, who you just look at and go, all right, I'm going to ignore the record of the Buccaneers and say the fantasy production has been there, which is why you play Adam Humphries in Tampa, which is why you play Chris Godwin for the Buccaneers with Deshaun Jackson down. So, you know, I think matchups come into play, certainly, if you're, you know, making tiebreakers, but you stick with your stud. That's what got you this far.
Matt, I got another question for you before we let you get out of here. With the playoffs here, we got two rookie quarterbacks out there that are starting to pick up some steam a little bit. Can you rely on guys like Josh Allen or Lamar Jackson in the playoffs as quarterbacks?
Yeah, I think you can. I mean, I'll tell you right now, I have Jackson ranked at 13. That's ahead of Tom Brady. That's ahead of Kirk Cousins. That's ahead of Carson Wentz. Josh Allen has been a running fool the last 2 weeks. I mean, I didn't expect it necessarily, but I tell people this all the time. If you've been streaming all year, there's no reason to stop now, and Josh Allen has been giving you a lot. I mean, the guy has rushed for over 230 yards in the last 2 weeks. Now, you don't bank on 100 yards a week, but he's good for about 25 to 50, I think, this week against the Jets, which is a great matchup. So, yeah, if you're streaming, you can continue to stream. I've said this to people before. I said, hey, I've been at the championship weeks with Matt Moore and Tim Couch and Derek Anderson. I mean, like, you got to think that way. If it's gotten you this far, it can work. If you've had Saints in your lineups the last 2 weeks, you might not be playing this week because Sean Payton's an offensive genius, and he likes to use fourth and fifth string guys to win games. And it's working. It's not helping our fantasy teams, but it's working. So, yeah. you know, don't get fooled by name value as well. If a guy's not getting it done, I'll give you a good example. Tevin Coleman in Atlanta is a really good player. And when Devontae Freeman went down, you went, okay, Tevin Coleman in a contract year is going to show himself off here and go nuts and be the number one guy in Atlanta. And it hasn't happened. They don't have a great defense. They're not using him the right way. He's not getting a good quality of touches. Ito Smith's been involved. But you go, but it's Tevin Coleman. He's been a top 25 running back the last 2 years. Doesn't matter. He's not there now. So don't get blinded by that name value. If you're using a Lamar Jackson against the Chiefs this weekend, you probably have a top 15, top 12 quarterback, and that's just fine. And if that means you have to change the next couple of weeks, Jameis Winston's got the Cowboys coming up. He's got some tough matchups coming up here. He's got Baltimore. If it works for this week, that's fine. And then we reload next week and see where things are at. You got to judge this on a week-to-week basis. You can't get too far ahead of yourself in the fantasy playoffs.
Sounds to me like it's a what-have-you-done-for-me-lately world.
Mm. Yep.
And none of my guys did anything for me this year. But Tony's alive. We'll see if he can keep it going. Matt, you have kept it going for us all year. We really appreciate it. I know the listeners out there love hearing from you each week. And we look forward to catching up with you next week as well. Good luck to you and everybody out there in their fantasy playoffs this week. With this information, you should be in better shape. Right, Matt?
Yes, sir. Thank you, guys. Good luck, Tony, and good luck to everybody in the fantasy playoffs this week.
All right, Matt. Thank you again, brother.